This is The Guardian.
Reggie Ahmed here on Gadigal land with a full story.
We will support baby bonuses for a new baby boom. How does that sound? That sounds pretty good.
There's a populist right-wing trend of pushing women and families to have more babies.
I want more babies in the United States of America.
I wouldn't want to tax anybody more, but you might give people tax breaks for having quite a few children.
It's a policy that's been around for a long time, one that's been used here in Australia to counter ageing populations and our economic woes.
One for your husband and one for your wife and one for the country.
And pronatalism is having a bit of a moment once again, with New Nationals leader Matt Canavan anointing his leadership with this message.
We need to have more Australian everything. We need to manifest a hyper Australia here. We need to go hyper Australia for our country. We need more Australian babies.
But do pronatalist policies even work? Or is it more about conservative attitudes towards immigration? Today, political reporter Krishani Danji on the politics of pronatalism. It's Monday, the 30th of March. Hi, Krishani. Good to see you.
Hi, Rigid.
As a political reporter and a blogger, you must know politicians, they love to hug babies and they love to talk about people having babies.
They absolutely do. And to give you sort of the best example I possibly can, the new baby of Alicia Payne, the member for Canberra, was in Parliament House, and immediately photos of Albo kissing that little baby's head were just kind of flooding everywhere. So Pollies love babies, but they also love talking about people having babies at the moment.
It works on so many levels, and we can't forget the newly minted Nationals leader, Matt Canavan. One of the first things he said when he got the leadership was, we should have more Australian babies. It's not a new message. We have been here before.
Yeah, we certainly have. I mean, it was a pretty kind of bold statement in a way, like really sort of setting out his priorities for his time as the Nationals leader. So it's sort of come from many different contexts. So you might remember in the early 2000s, John Howard as Prime Minister and Peter Costello had this message of, you know, one for mum, one for dad, one for the country.
Absolutely. That was a very memorable moment.
Yeah. And then they had the baby bonus, which started off as $3,000 and then sort of ticked up and then eventually got canned. So we've had all of these moments throughout history, you know, the baby boom as well after the war, where politicians have been telling their people to have more babies. And it's come from a lot of different things. So in the early 2000s, the message was around, you know, trying to extend the population, making sure that there are enough people. What we're seeing now is more of that, but to a greater level. But there is also this additional context around immigration. And that's also something I think that Matt Canavan is sort of tapping into at the moment as well.
Before we get into more of that populist message, as you've just said, there's an economic element to it, and it's not just on the right. Jim Chalmers and Labor have also talked about lifting the declining birth rate too.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Jim Chalmers said not too long ago that it would be good if people were having more children, because the way that our whole kind of economic system has been built, not just in Australia but in every country, is that you need more young people and people of working age and contributing age who pay a lot of tax, running all of the services that people need, things like even running aged care homes or building infrastructure, all of those sorts of things, to then be able to sustain the oldest generations and the youngest generations that aren't able to sort of in the same way economically contribute.
So there's the politics of the economic reasons, but is there something different in the language when we hear some populist parties talk about pronatalism as an ideology, as an alternative to immigration?
Yeah, it definitely feels like there's a bit of a split there in the way that some of the responses have been made. So, as you say, there's this kind of shift politically in a lot of different countries. We see it a lot in the US, in some European countries like Italy, like Hungary, where there are there's sort of more right populist leaders and populist politics. We see it a little bit in what Matt Canavan is saying here as well with his message. So, I mean, Matt Canavan is someone who has been pushing for this for a long time. In his maiden speech to Parliament back in 2013, he was talking about how he and his wife had agreed that she would be the one who would stay at home, be a stay-at-home mother. He's got five children himself. He's a staunch Catholic. So there's this sort of religious element to it as well in terms of him believing in people having lots of children there too. So when Matt Canavan said, you know, in his very first speech, "I want to see more Australian babies," it really echoed a lot of what someone like JD Vance, for example, said in, I think it was his first speech as vice president, which was, "I want to see more American babies." And so America's a really kind of interesting example as well, where there's so many different kind of political elements to it. So there's this element of keeping it within America, within American citizens. There's also the sort of real conservative anti-abortion stances. There's also the elements of the traditional family, which again, there are ties between the shift towards, particularly amongst those populist Republicans, wanting to see those traditional family structures, perhaps women staying at home and looking after the children, which is something that we see Matt Canavan kind of looking towards as well. Some of the policies that he's put forward around things like income splitting are policies that would see or that would benefit mothers who would stay at home looking after the children. And then also this kind of element of abortion as well.
So there's coded messaging within that that comes down to gender. Is that what you're saying? Especially those global patterns. It's not just about, well, men and women should have babies. Is the message that actually it should go back to the traditional structure where women have children and stay at home doing the care?
That's part of it for sure. I mean, there are so many different kind of elements of this policy, and a lot of people come into this conversation in very different ways. So from the beginning of our conversation, when we're talking about people like economists, demographers that are coming from it from a nonpartisan economic, social angle, who are just looking at the problem of the fact that we have a declining population or that we have an aging population, to all of these other elements around immigration, abortion, traditional family structures, you know, sometimes anti-women, or that, yeah, that they don't want necessarily women to work. I'm not saying that all of that is what the Nationals are sort of putting forward or what the US and the Republicans and Donald Trump and JD Vance are putting forward, but there are all of these different kind of elements that end up being involved in this conversation.
It becomes a sort of a gateway to bring in other political ideologies. You've mentioned this, but it's having quite a global revival, this pronatalist ideology, especially in Western democracies. I was fascinated to read that Trump calls himself the fertility president.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. So he has, as you say, called himself the fertility president and put forward some inclination that he wants to support particularly IVF treatment for women. But again, part of it is that, like, someone like JD Vance doesn't support childcare policy, for example. He said that people, families don't want to put their kids in, quote, crap daycare. So again, it's sort of this push towards people having more children and having the technology affordable for people to have children, but not necessarily have the other supports around that would allow families and women to go back to work and have their children in a childcare setting.
It's fascinating to look at the gender politics. I do want to come back to the racial undertones and what experts tell you might be happening there, especially in the context of, say, Britain and some of the Reform UK policies.
So Reform UK is a really interesting example here as well, because, again, their leader Nigel Farage has talked about more UK babies, people having more British babies. And so there's a couple of things that he's said that he wants to do if in power. One of them is to scrap the two-child benefit cap, but only for British families.
And the benefit cap is, it's about if you have a couple of kids, you can get government subsidy any more than that, and you get cut off.
You're not eligible anymore. And it's means tested as well. But essentially what he's saying is that he wants having children to be more affordable for lower paid workers and for working class British citizens. But there are certainly some anti-migrant, anti-immigration tones there because he says, quote, the limit would still apply to migrant families, quote, who come into the country and suddenly decide to have a lot of children. So again, sort of drawing that line between supporting families who are British citizens, those who are there, versus migrant families who might come and move into the UK. He's also talked about more generous tax cuts for families, again, trying to create this environment where families would be able to have more children. It's not just in the UK. It's really interesting in Hungary and Italy as well. Racial undertones come in when they talk about what's been called as a conspiracy theory, which is called the Great Replacement Theory.
The Great Replacement Theory, conspiracy theory, that's come from the far right. So it's fascinating. You see, on the one hand, it's just a basic economic policy. On the other hand, it becomes this contest and conflict between having children within a country versus migration. That's essentially the picture there.
Yeah, and so one of the experts that I spoke to, Laura Ferracchioli, an associate professor of political philosophy at the University of Sydney, she said that when it does come to the ultimate question of an ageing population, there are two things that you can do, really. One is to have more babies, and one is to bring in more migrants into the country. And so that is where this sort of central kind of conflict, as you say, occurs, which is that where does that mix kind of come from between having policies and creating an environment where people have more children so that you are able to combat an ageing population in that way versus bringing migrants into the country who are young, who are also having their own children, to combat it as well. So that's the sort of foundational kind of element of where this conflict comes into play. But then you do have, again, countries like Hungary, like Italy, where their governments are quite right, quite populist, who are coming up with these sorts of words around the Great Replacement Theory, and that creates a sort of other element of it as well.
Krishani, coming back to Australia, we do see the Nationals canvassing some policies for their pronatalist push. What do people tell you about this push from really both sides of politics about trying to encourage them to have more children? Does it actually cut through?
Yeah. So, I mean, I spoke to a woman in Sydney who's a single mother with one child, and she said that it's not that people don't want to have children, it's that they can't. And she's someone who, she told me that she grew up in a family, she had two siblings, and she always wanted to have two or three kids. But due to her personal circumstances, her husband left when her daughter was a baby. And then she's had to basically make this choice, she told me, between being able to work and earn and have stable housing to try and save up to buy a house for her and her daughter, and this desire to have more children. She says her daughter has wanted siblings as well, and she says that there are other friends of hers, other families who are in similar situations where they want to be able to have more children but can't. And they say that it's basically housing is sort of the biggest issue, that if you can't afford stable housing, you can't afford to buy a house, that really kind of creates this choice between, well, that and more kids.
We'll be right back. Krishani, both here in Australia and overseas, when you look at the statistics, is there any evidence that pronatalist policies even work, especially when people are dealing with cost of living issues?
The experts are sort of divided about this in terms of whether it can or can't work, and also whether what the policies do is just sort of stop the further decline of fertility rates. If you look at a policy like the baby bonus, for example, the E61 Research Institute put out a paper last year where they found that after Peter Costello introduced the baby bonus, births increased by 6.5%. Births increased the most, 10% amongst mothers with no taxable income, 8% amongst below median income mothers, while high income mothers showed little to no response. So it showed that particularly amongst women that didn't make a lot of money, it did have an impact on them, and it did sort of shift the dial a little bit to increase the total number of births over that period of time. But it's a small one. So experts will say, I spoke to the ANU's Nicholas Biddle, who says that sometimes we can see a small bump here or there in the increase of births, but the policies are very expensive and don't necessarily translate to an increase of births. But he also says that's not to say that you shouldn't have these policies in place anyway, because things like affordable childcare, things like support for mothers, support for fathers, parents are really central to actually basic human rights as well. So it's not that they shouldn't be in place.
Well, that's I found it fascinating to look at the Nordic countries where they do have a focus on gender equity when they're trying to encourage the birth rate. I mean, was there evidence that their policies worked?
Well, not necessarily, but the experts were sort of saying that, well, if you didn't have those policies in place, I wonder how much lower they might be. So sometimes it's that we don't necessarily know if they're increasing the birth rate, but perhaps they're saving the country from a decreased fertility rate. So the Nordic countries are a really interesting example because they take a very gender equal approach to all of this. So things like paid parental leave accessible to both parents, a very progressive childcare policy that really encourages mothers to be able to go back to work as well, those sorts of things that take a real sort of equal approach. Whereas if you look at other countries in Asia, for example, in our region, Japan, South Korea, Singapore, where countries are trying to create more of a gender equal policy, increasing the amount of paternity leave available, for example, in Singapore and Japan, they've now introduced 4 weeks of paternity leave, but the policies aren't actually being taken up widely. And so there's this sort of cultural perception, experts say, around work, particularly in those countries, where if a father or a man doesn't work or is taking time off work, they're seen negatively in the workplace. And so part of it is this sort of, you put the policies in place, but there needs to be a broader cultural shift then for those fathers to actually take up those policies as well.
Just finally, when you spoke to different people who look at all of this policy, in the end, do they say it's just a bit of a distraction from perhaps the conversation we should be having, maybe about an economy that doesn't rely on population growth or how to deal with the cost of living generally?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And so when I spoke to Laura Ferracchioli, an associate professor of political philosophy at the University of Sydney, she said in one way, the kind of identity politics or the conversations around migration that have these sorts of racial undertones are not particularly helpful to addressing the actual underlying problem. And the fact that our society globally is set up in a way that really requires population growth to continue to exist and to continue to grow the economy takes away from this broader conversation about, well, is there a way to move forward without having to require migration or increased fertility, and change the conversation around, you know, actually addressing the underlying problems to this.
Krishani, they are very nutty and knotty issues that you've been looking at. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thanks, Richard.
That was political reporter Krishani Danji. This episode was produced by Miles Herbert and Karishma Luthria, sound design and mixing by Joe Koning, and the executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. Don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts, including on Spotify. I'm Regid Ahmed. See you soon.